Welcome to the Growing in Grace podcast, where you can listen in on some casual conversation about the good news of Jesus without all of the inconsistent religious double talk. If you've ever struggled with feelings of hopelessness, guilt, and despair, or wondered if you're really right with God, it's time to discover the true freedom that comes with the gospel of unlimited and overflowing grace.
Hey, the Cap, along with the Breeze Man, the Growing in Grace podcast, heard at growingingrace.org and on your favorite podcasting app. We're coming up on a 20th anniversary here pretty soon, aren't we?
Yeah, it won't be long, a couple months or so.
Ooh.
And 1,000 podcasts, too.
Is that the end? Is that the end for us, or are we going to continue?
It'll be like the people in the year 1,000 who thought it was going to be the end. You ever hear about that? You know, like that everyone, it's going to end. The end is coming. The year 1,000.
Yeah. Maybe 2,000, for that matter.
Maybe podcast 1,000. Oh, yeah. Yeah, 2002, people thought that.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see what 20 years brings us.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Last week we were talking about faith, and really even the last couple of weeks in some ways, faith and works. You know, it's one of those things, Joel, where I don't know, we so easily get things backwards. I mean, Paul said this, 2 Corinthians 4, therefore we do not lose heart, even though our outward man is perishing, the body, yet the inward man is renewed day by day. That's pretty cool. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. While we do not look, and here we go now, while we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. Paul to the Corinthians. I find that interesting because you'll remember the writer of Hebrews was describing faith as the evidence of that which is what? Which is not seen.
Yeah.
And yet we still try to make, you know, when we're looking at what some of the things that James said, who believed that the Jewish people were still under the law of Moses while believing in Christ at the same time, and believe that faith and works needed to be in place for justification to occur. And I know that we kind of mentioned last week how people like to use that argument that there's justification is used in two ways in the scriptures. To be declared absolutely righteous by God, which Paul defends, absolute justification in this true sense of faith alone. Justification also means to demonstrate the validity or just nature of something. In other words, these are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't line up with each other. Now, I understand where people get this from. And I know that language experts sometimes it's kind of like a law, like a law that's on the books, Joel. I'm not talking about the Mosaic law here, but sometimes, you know, things go to court, Supreme Court eventually sometimes, and even they can't agree, but they'll have a vote on it and say, here's what we believe is the interpretation of this law. Well, the same thing happens with language, with words. Language experts who study language in different languages, they will not always necessarily agree or come to different conclusions, different perspectives on what a single word may mean. So, you know, in the Greek, this word justification, which shows up, what, I think around 40 times or so in the New Testament from this Greek word, dikaiō or something like that, to make righteous. To defend the cause of, to plead for the righteousness or innocence of, equit, justify, hence I regard as righteous. There's word studies out there that can also say something that can cause a variety of different thoughts and opinions on what that word might mean. Here's some helps word studies, properly approved, especially in a legal authoritative sense, to know what is right. Let me jump down to a lexicon here, Thayer's Greek lexicon. Properly, according to the analogy of other verbs, to make or render righteous, such as he ought to be. Here's where people get confused. To show, it can mean this. To show, exhibit, evince one to be righteous, such as he is, and wishes himself to be considered. So when people see that to show, they think we need to demonstrate our righteousness, or we may not have righteousness. We may not be justified if we don't show it. And that does not line up with the gospel that Paul was teaching to others. That showing, that demonstration, that manifestation of righteousness and justification, you know, in John's first letter, it says that Jesus was manifested. Jesus appeared, Paul said. And Jesus came to take away sin, to destroy the works of the devil. So the demonstration isn't in what we do to prove our justification by works. It's the work of Christ that has brought and demonstrated this, that the love of Christ has demonstrated that justification and righteousness is gifted to people. And it may result in people producing or bearing fruit, not producing the fruit, but bearing the fruit that God produces through us. It may result in that, but it's not doing that that results in justification or righteousness. Are you with me, Joel? Am I making sense here? Help me out. Make me make sense.
Well, I hear you. And the thing is about all these different definitions is that it takes context, the use of a word, what it means. It always has to do with context. So again, the same word, if it has more than one meaning, you have to look at the context to see what is being said. And when you talk about justification before God, when you look at the revelation that Paul received from God about justification, Paul not only says that justification is by grace through faith apart from works, that it is not about works. It's not about showing anything. In fact, it's about the person who is ungodly being made righteous apart from works. And then you compare it to what James is saying. The context is completely different because James is making a point. Well, Paul is making a point about justification having nothing to do with works. James is adding works into the equation. And like I had said, James does say, but someone will say, you have faith and I have works. And then James says, show me your faith without your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. So for a brief period here, a brief little time here, James is saying, I'm going to show you my faith by my works. But in the overall point that he's making, that's not where he's, you know, Paul will often do this. He'll make a statement like, let me look at it real quick here. He'll make a statement in Romans 2. Paul says, for not the hearers of the law are just in the sight of God, but the doers of the law will be justified. If you just pluck that out, it's like, well, what? I thought the gospel was it's not those who do the law. And then you keep reading, and Paul is really just making the point that for those under the law, If you're going to be justified by the law, you have to be a doer of the law. But he goes on to point out that nobody is a doer of the law. There is nobody. So nobody's ever going to be justified by the law because nobody ever does the law. God knew that. That's the point. And so the gospel is that righteousness, justification cannot come by the law. And so when you look at James, when he makes that little statement, the overall picture, if you look before what he said before and you look at what he continues to say, he's not really making a point or a case for justification, just merely being, he's not merely saying that works just show that you're justified, because he says faith without works is dead. He doesn't just say faith needs some works just to show that you're justified, but he's saying that faith without works is dead. And again, he gives the examples of Abraham and what he did. He gives the example of Rahab the harlot being justified. He says, likewise, was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out the other way? Okay, so Rahab was showing that she was justified by what she did. Well, no, look what he says next. For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also. So you really got to do a lot of gymnastics, jump through a lot of hoops in order to make James simply talking about works, just showing that you have faith. And again, looking at all the other things that are said about James in Galatians 2 and in Acts 15, Acts 21, it's pretty clear to see. A couple weeks ago, we were talking about those in Galatia, the Galatians, and you had mentioned they were, I wrote this down, they were challenged in their thinking. You know, the Judaizers came along and challenged them in what they had been thinking about as far as justification. They were saved by grace through faith apart from works, but then these people came in and challenged that thought. And you can see evidence that James is one of those people who believed the way that those Judaizers thought, because if you read again his letter, his epistle from beginning to end, it's coming from a point of law. He's coming from a place of law, and also in the other things that you see him saying and doing throughout the scriptures, you can see that he didn't really have this understanding that Paul had. And again, as we've said, it's okay for us to understand that. And we need to understand that, in fact. Yeah, otherwise, we will try to make James out to be saying something that he's not saying. And we don't want to do that. We just want to understand the true gospel and understand when there were other people who didn't understand that, so that we won't get confused and that we won't try to make James out to be saying something that he wasn't saying, so that people will be more confused. I probably confused people with what I was just saying there. So I'm going to hand it back to you.
Well, it's easy for people to get caught up in this and start boasting in themselves and what they do. It's boasting in themselves, the very thing Paul said not to do. The only thing we boast in is the cross of Christ, not what we do
right
for justification. You know, sometimes these verses that get quoted and applied, we were talking about scriptural somersaults or gymnastics in the scriptures to try to make things fit our narrative. Somebody might say, they'll pull this one out, Joel, Luke 7:35, but wisdom is justified by all her children. Jesus said that. So let's sit here and just look at this one verse and try to figure out, what did Jesus mean by this? Wisdom is justified by all her children. You know, we take these individual verses, try to paste them into the puzzle of other passages so that it fits our mindset, our narrative, our assumptions. But, you know, when we do that, we take these individual verses, we try to Christianize them and then wrap them up in Jewish bacon. and that's what happens. And then we get confused, we get mixed up, covenants get combined, and ugh, what a mess. But Jesus here in this passage, to what he says this, let's go back a few verses. To what shall I say to the people of this generation? What are they like? They are like children sitting in the marketplace calling to one another. And then he goes on. He gets into John the Baptist here. For John the Baptist came neither eating bread nor drinking wine, and you say he has a demon. The Son of Man has come eating and drinking, and you say, look, a glutton and a wine bibber, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. Wine bibber, by the way, one of my favorite words in the Bible. I always picture people wearing a bib while they're drinking wine back then. But wisdom is justified by all her children. So I had somebody on the James bandwagon who said that wisdom is justified by her works. What is Jesus talking about here? I mean, he was referring to John the Baptist. The Son of Man has come eating and drinking. John the Baptist didn't do any of that. You called him he had a demon. You're saying this other guy's a glutton and a wine bibber, a friend of sinners. Wisdom is justified by all her children. So people somehow tie this into justification by works. And I just think you're connecting the dots in the wrong numbered order when you do that. Because nobody knows because you look up this word children, I mean, it in the Greek, every time it's used, it's talking about children, kids, not works. But even if you wanted to say that, even if you wanted to say that somehow wisdom is justified by all her children. Let me just point this out. Verse 29. Again, let's look at this. When all the people heard Jesus, even the tax collectors justified God, having been baptized with the baptism of John. What does that mean? One footnote I've got here in my Bible says to be declared the righteousness of. So let's use that. When all the people heard him, even the tax collectors, the sinners, declared the righteousness of God, having been baptized with the baptism of John. So even if you want to go down to Luke 7:35 and say wisdom is justified by her works, it's the works of God. It's the works of God that we have been made righteous in him. And so just some more food for thought here, Joel, but we don't boast in ourselves. Will fruit be produced by the Spirit through us who bear it? Yes, the Spirit desires for that, but we turn it inside out sometimes and suggest that we go out and do things in order to prove our justification. And that's just not a gospel of grace. And if that were true, then as Paul said in Galatians chapter 2, Jesus came for nothing.
Yeah, and I'll wrap up with the thought that even if it's thought that it's just a matter of works showing that you're justified, if you think that James is saying that, or if you believe that, that's still not the gospel. It's still not true. The obvious example that people can bring up, and that I'll bring up, the thief on the cross. What works did he have to show that he was justified? Jesus said, I tell you the truth, today you will be with me in paradise. And he didn't have any works. There were no works. Again, I can't quote Paul enough. I love what he says in Romans 4, that it's the ungodly, to the one who does not work, but believes in him who justifies the ungodly. His faith is accounted for righteousness. Like you said from Hebrews, faith is evidence of things not seen. It's not evidence of things that are done. And doing things are not evidence of faith. That's not the gospel. It's just not true. The evidence of faith, really, is a person who is at peace knowing that his justification has nothing to do with works. And that's really something that only can be known in the heart. You can't really demonstrate it so much except in just knowing within yourself that you are justified by faith apart from works. So the gospel, the pure gospel, is that works play no part in this thing. Again, like you were saying, sure, a righteous person, you can see them living in a righteous way. A lot of that comes from renewing our minds to who we truly are, our new identity in Christ. But it's not proof. We don't need proof. We don't need works as proof of anything. We simply need to believe and rest in what Christ has done, and we're justified apart from works. So faith without works is very much alive. It's not dead. Faith without works is the faith that justifies. So let's talk about that coming up next week on Growing in Grace.
This has been Growing in Grace with Mike Kapler and Joel Brzezicki, heard online through various internet sources around the world each week. Access past programs by visiting growingingrace.org. Share it with a friend and listen again next week for more Growing in Grace.